Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. This was a significant day off between games 1 and 2 of the Western Conference Finals for a few different reasons, but the most significant of them came on the injury front, as both Kawhi Leonard and Andre Iguodala had MRIs, and fortunately, both players came back with no structural damage. Iguodala, it's his left knee. Kawhi Leonard, it is his left ankle. So that is a very good thing overall. You never want anybody to get hurt, really any team. And the unfortunate part is that it sounds like, at least tentatively, that neither one of them will play. It was a little bit strange in terms of the timing for the Spurs, because Coach Greg Popovich said earlier in the day that Leonard was out, that he wasn't going to play in game two, but then after that the word questionable was used. So, you know, I would say it's not that likely that he plays, and especially when your coach says you're not going to play, that probably means you're not going to play. But that still is significant to kind of keep an eye on, just for the sake of it. And Kawhi in this series, yes, they did win game 6 against Houston without him on the road. Against the Warriors, a team that good, I feel that he is indispensable. And it does make the series less interesting. I talk about this fairly frequently, but I feel like it is a point that is important to remember, is that a team that goes down 2-0 in a best-of-seven series then has to win 4 out of 5 games in order to win that series. And even full strength versus less than full strength, I think that would be a hard ask for the Spurs or anyone else. If Leonard can't go, presumably Jonathan Simmons will start in his stead. Simmons has done a nice job in the playoffs, including in that game 6 without Kawhi, but he isn't the offensive player. And I think that's something Ben Golliver and I talked about on yesterday's Locked On Warriors, is whether the Spurs missed Kawhi more on offense or defense. And I vacillate between the two. His defense was great. He was doing a nice job of helping off other guys and disrupting the Warriors' offense. But he helps create so many of the seams that make San Antonio get those open looks. I thought he was a big part of why LaMarcus Aldridge's opportunities were materially worse in the second half than they were in the first half. Some of that was also Draymond Green playing better and the Warriors not turning the ball over as much, but the absence of Kawhi Leonard certainly made all of that harder for the Spurs and easier for the Warriors. On the Warriors front, Iguodala's MRI news is positive overall. The fact that there's no structural damage is clearly better than the alternative, but that does not mean necessarily that he is out of the woods. It has been reported that the issue he's dealing with is knee soreness, and that he was limited. He wasn't doing a lot of, I think the way Michael Lee phrased it was, or somebody, maybe it was Chris Haynes, was that he wasn't doing a lot of the up and down stuff in the Warriors pre-series workouts. And then he didn't play much. He played about 10 minutes in game 1. It's hard to know, especially with somebody like Iguodala with his history, exactly, you know, what that is. Could be something like tendonitis, could just be, you know, knee soreness. But the Warriors would be very well served to just take it easy, particularly if Kawhi Leonard is not going to play. And that opens up a couple of different avenues for Golden State in terms of their rotation. The one Mike Brown used in game 1 was more Sean Livingston, because without Kawhi Leonard on the floor, you don't really need that defensive linchpin, especially a strong, physically strong player at the 3. And so Livingston functions in many ways as a, you know, an Andre Light of sorts, and he can distribute, he can be that secondary ball handler. He cannot shoot threes, but Iguodala has struggled with that in the early part of the playoffs and, you know, a little bit after that. So he can fill that role. I personally would rather, not necessarily rather than Livingston, but I would like to see Patrick McCaw get some of that as well, because McCaw's ability to make threes is incredibly valuable. It helps kind of keep the spacing for everybody else. And particularly in lineups where Stephen Curry is still on the floor, I think that he can help do that and be a low usage player who can take some of the tougher guarding matchups. And I don't think you want Steph on Jonathan Simmons, but you can play Patrick McCaw on Patty Mills in this series. I think you put him on Manu Ginobili in this series. And then you can put Curry on some less challenging guys. Could be Danny Green, could be DeJounte Murray, you know, go in those directions. And that could be an option. Then Clay is big enough to, I think he can do a good enough job on John Simmons. So you can go in those directions, particularly if the Warriors want to go in a route, which I would recommend, of giving Durant earlier rest in the first quarter, maybe take him out around the 3 minute mark or something like that, and then seeing how that works. And so instead of McCaw replacing Iguodala in a way, in some ways he's actually replacing some of those minutes with Durant, and then Durant is replacing Iguodala at the beginning of the second quarter. I think that could work well, especially if David West is going to be a little bit shaky defensively. Having Draymond and Durant out there together, that gives you a lot of strong side and weak side defense, which could help, and a more reliable offensive base in Durant. So that's one way to run the rotations and to kind of make this all work. There are a few other ideas, and certainly Matt Barnes can be a part of it, but if Kawhi is not going to play, the biggest reason to play Matt Barnes is to have him be another guy who can slow down a small forward-sized scorer. You know, Durant in the next series, I'm sorry, LeBron in the next series, in case Durant can't really do it from a strength perspective, or Kawhi in this one. And if Kawhi's out, there isn't really much of a place for Matt Barnes. He's kind of a man without a country. And if Iguodala can't play, it also changes some of the ideas of how they want to handle the Draymond at center lineups. They can go with Livingston like they did before. They could also go with McCaw, which is something that I've supported in the past. And I think both of those are superior options to Barnes. I also don't think, I mean, periodically they would try something like Ian Clark or something there. I think that's just a little bit too small. And while Clark is a better shooter to me than McCaw is, the difference between the two of them isn't that significant. Then Livingston, he's just a little bit more versatile defensively. You can make that work too. So some real options for the Warriors in that sense. And my recommendation would be, if there's any reason, unless basically he's close to 100%, which seems awfully unlikely, the long gap can work wonders for Iguodala, because that's a long time between games. The Warriors don't play again after Tuesday's game two until Saturday. So save him out, expect that you're going to win the game. Maybe, if you really feel that it's on the margins, keep him active, because it's not like they're going to be getting much out of Damian Jones in that game. So if Iguodala is cool with it, and basically kind of the idea of, you know, maybe he goes through kind of cursory warm-ups if that doesn't hurt him too much, and then he's just kind of there in case of absolute emergency, maybe you do that. But again, that ties in, that's why you have a medical staff. That's why you figure all these things out. And I would completely understand if they didn't want to go in that direction and they didn't want to push it as hard as that would probably require, because you can't just do the kind of the video game thing of, oh, you know, he's at 100% energy, he's at 100% all that, and just throw him in for a couple minutes. The human body doesn't work that way. So I, as I usually do, I defer to the medical staff on a circumstance like that, and we'll see where it goes. But I'm fascinated to see how it works out. And then the other piece of news that affects the Warriors on the day, I'll also mention just in passing that Boston beat Washington in Game 7, so that means they're going to face Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals and will actually have home court advantage, which creates this weird dynamic because Boston has home court, but Cleveland is the clear favorite in the series. And there's an argument to be made that actually facilitates a sweep, just because if Boston loses those two games at home, they don't get the like light of, oh, we can win one at home and then we can make our fans excited, because if they lose the first two, then it's basically done. And we'll have to see. And I fully expect that whether it's in four games or five, Cleveland is going to be very well rested for the NBA Finals. But of course, sports are never completely predictable, so we'll have to see. But the other story was San Antonio coach Greg Popovich talked during his media availability today about the Pachulia Kawhi Leonard incident. And these are actually two separate parts of his same 4 minute interview, but I'm putting them together. So understand that there is a little bit of a divider between the two, a couple minutes of questions back and forth, but I wanted to include it and talk a little bit about it, because I feel like that's an important part of the story of the series.
A two-step lead with your foot closeout is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. You can go back and look in Dallas games where he got a flagrant two for elbowing Patty Mills. The play where he took Kawhi down and locked his arm in Dallas and could have broken his arm. Ask David West, his current teammate, how things went when Zsa Zsa was playing for Dallas and he and David got into it. And then think about the history he's had and what that means to a team, what happened last night. A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. If he would have played and they'd ended up winning, I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on. But this is crap. And because he's got this history, it can't just be, oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry.
So I think that there is a lot of validity to what he is saying in terms of the idea of intent. Something Ben Golliver and I talked about yesterday, and then I also talked about with Nate Duncan on Dunked On after game one, is the idea that intent is a silly thing to argue about in this case because it's unprovable, and unless there's an admission, it's just kind of floating out there, and you can believe it, you cannot believe it, but it's not worth arguing because there's no substance to argue. However, when you get into, I mean, he uses the manslaughter comparison, but when you get into the idea of recklessness or you get into the idea of clumsiness, at a certain point, even those things don't really matter that much because Kawhi is out. The league has decided not to punish Pachulia further, and that makes a lot of sense because from what I understand, and I feel confident this is right, there is not really a precedent for doing so. And it would be a strange and challenging place to start, considering guys spraining their ankles on a contest is something that happens fairly frequently. Al Horford contesting on Markieff Morris sprained his ankle in game one of that series and functionally changed it, you know, early on in the first half of game one. And I believe there was one involving Giannis as well. I think it was Giannis and Serge Ibaka. So while I think there's a good argument to be made that Pachulia's is the most egregious of those just because of that kind of phantom second step, the line is not probably there. But I do think, going back to what Ben said on yesterday's show, that they can draw a better line in the future. This play could be the flashpoint for that. But that is a very different discussion. And then the second part of what Pop said that I think is important, and I tried to convey this a little bit yesterday, but I feel like I need to do a better job of it, is the idea that Pachulia does have a specific history with the Spurs. As a member of the Dallas Mavericks last year, he got into some issues with Kawhi Leonard. There was one involving Kawhi's arm where he didn't let go and people thought he should have. He got into a little bit of a thing with David West. I believe there was another one with Patty Mills. And while past this prologue, it does matter here. I mean, for those of you who are fans of the NBA, just think about what would happen if Kelly Olynyk was involved in an incident in the Eastern Conference Finals involving another one of the Cavaliers, because he had that big thing with Kevin Love 2 years ago, which actually ended up affecting the Warriors in the finals because Kevin Love was unavailable to play. So those players, in the eyes of those involved, lose the benefit of the doubt for them. And while Warriors fans don't have to consider that, I think they should consider it in the course of just understanding the reaction. And the reaction is what it will be, but I do think that it's important to understand it and to just kind of see it as a part of it. I don't have a definitive sense in my mind of intent or recklessness, though I think it does border more on that line. And I brought up Dellavedova yesterday. I will bring him up again. There is a line where something can be so reckless that it's irresponsible and it's dangerous and you want to punish it for what it is. And he was called for a foul. So, you know, maybe that's as far as it goes. But it is kind of in that gray area where it was like a zealous contest, and maybe the idea that Kawhi was hurting in that way, that, man, Kawhi is just so awesome that you want to contest on him hard. And maybe it's that you want to do that hard and you're not thinking about the ankle, but a consequence of doing so in the way that you did is that it comes that way. And that happens. I mean, that's a part of it. And I feel like that's as far as I really want to go with it, but it is a part of it and a part of the story. And I don't know where it goes from here. I mean, I hope Kawhi is available as soon as he can be. It'd be great if that questionable for game two turns into active or something of that sort. But I also don't care about the narrative, which is kind of growing up about, oh, the Warriors are lucky. They're getting all these teams when they're unhealthy. Like, yes, certainly they're benefiting from that, just like many teams benefit from opponents that are not 100%. But I would also advise that Warriors fans who are getting hot and bothered by that, just let it slide, because history, and I've become more aware of this writing a book, history, generally speaking, doesn't remember that, and it definitely doesn't put asterisks on it. There are various times, even looking back on the last two NBA finals, not only was Kevin Love out of the 2015 finals, Kyrie Irving got hurt, and then in 2016, Steph Curry wasn't right, Bogut was out, and then Iguodala was injured, and so those are part of it. You know, there are issues in a lot of different series, and you just kind of have to see it for what it is at the time and just understand that if history is what matters to you and the idea of relevance and legacy and all that, these things will fall by the wayside. And if that matters to you, then so be it. If it doesn't, then you can roll with it there. And it's also not something where you can really change anybody's mind on it. So there isn't really a point in engaging. It's one of those kind of no winners arguments where you just get mad. You get mad that people don't see it your way. So, I mean, I think just kind of taking it on the approach of, you know, hope everybody's healthy, which you always do, and hope that there's a good competitive series, and everything else is just going to be what it'll be. And if people say stupid things, don't be surprised. It happens all the time. But you can only control your reaction to it and what you contribute to the discussion. So that is the way that I would handle it. You can do whatever the heck you want. It's a free country. It's a free world for the most part. So you can appreciate it. And I feel like that's a good way to end this. Tomorrow is the draft lottery, or Tuesday. Most of you will be listening to this on Tuesday. It's weird to, again, not have the Warriors have any sort of impact on that. The Warriors do not have a first-round draft pick. It's still owed to Utah as a part of the trade to Clear Space to get Andre Iguodala. So it's different in that way, and you can watch it if you want. It will affect the Warriors in terms of teams in their division, teams in their conference have a lot on the line, including the Lakers, who could either keep or lose their pick. It depends on if they get three or better, they keep it. If it's four or worse, they lose it. So that impacts the Warriors in some tangential way, even though the Lakers aren't particularly awesome right now. And we'll see. So if you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. I will be back tomorrow with an episode on game two. Yes, TBA. Kind of depends on the way the game goes. But I enjoyed having Ben on yesterday. I like to have guests on, but it's just, you know, timing. I'm recording this at 12:30 a.m. So it's not always easy to find a guest at 12:30 a.m. So that will be the show. If you want to support us, you can do that in a number of different ways. You can leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. You can also subscribe, download every episode. Really do appreciate that, and spread the word. It's always a huge part of the show. And yeah, if you have anything, if you want to shoot me an email with what you think are like something to talk about the days after that, I might take one of the two off, because since the Warriors have a Saturday game, I'm definitely going to do one on that. That's a possibility as well. But if there's something that you think is a big picture topic, there are some things I want to kind of circle back on, but it'll depend on availability. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.